So let's do this. There we go. Okay, it is Wednesday, September 6th, and there are currently 8 teams within 5.5 games of the top AL wildcard spot. That could mean it's really exciting, or maybe it could mean that it's really mediocre. Josh, what are we going to about to see here?
Well, I think it's kind of one of those. We have 8 teams basically playing for the chance to get sacrificed to the Houston Astros as they continue their march to the World Series. So you have a lot of mediocre just trying to shift itself out. But it is kind of interesting to see which mediocre is going to rise to the top.
Yeah, there are some interesting cases here. You have a couple teams that are finally getting good after years of mediocrity. You have one team that was good, and this is kind of their last-ditch effort. And you have a couple teams that are definitely on the come-up. But I'm not exactly sure how things are going to break out. I definitely have my opinions. What do you say we run down the list and see what we think of each team and make a couple predictions?
Yeah, let's do it.
So starting from the bottom, the Kansas City Royals, they are in 8th place in the wild card standings right now, or 8th place among the teams that actually matter. I'm not a big believer in them, but they won the World Series, went to the World Series 2 years in a row a few years ago, eventually beating the New York Mets in their big upstart year. What do you think of their chances moving forward?
Well, if the Royals really want to do anything, they're going to need some more of that Esky magic back, because this is a pretty similar team to the teams that made the run to the World Series. I think first losing to the Giants and then winning the next year against the Mets, like you mentioned. But the problem is that this is a team that basically relied a lot on sequencing and getting timely hits. And this year, they just haven't done so. I mean, this is a team that ranks in the bottom third of the league. I think actually in the bottom 10th of the league in terms of runs scored, and has just kind of, they put up a WRC plus of 89. So as a team, they're hitting 11% worse than the rest of the league. So they just don't have the offensive firepower to kind of justify, having, a good bullpen with good arms back there. But when you're a team that's not taking the lead deep into games, it doesn't really matter how good your bullpen is. So I just think they don't have the punch to be able to kind of keep up with some of the other teams that we have ahead of them.
Yeah, I think one thing that's interesting about the Royals, who a minute ago I said were 3 games back, they're now 2.5 games back because they won tonight. One of the things that I think that's interesting about the Royals is that they're being led by Eric Hosmer and Mike Moustakas. And I know people always used to associate them with being led by Eric Hosmer and Mike Moustakas and Salvador Perez as well. But Hosmer and Moustakas in particular were known as kind of like the hot prospects when the Royals first got good about 5 years ago. But they've really underperformed across their careers. And they're both having career years this year, which I think is an interesting twist to this kind of end to the Royals, this kind of generation of the Kansas City Royals.
The Redemption Royals, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, it's very interesting because Kansas City, and as we talk about some of the other teams, we'll kind of go over their situations, but Kansas City had kind of the clearest goal in terms of what they, were planning to do this season, and that was to compete, and that was to try and get into the playoffs. Looking at the amount of contracts and the amount of money that they're about to have, leaving them for free agency, they're not going to be able to bring their core back. So it was kind of a, do or die year for them. And, like we said, we'll talk about the situation, but with all the teams ahead of them, they can't really just go ahead and die yet, but they just don't have – enough beyond Hosmer and Gordon to do it.
Hosmer and Moustakas, but they
excuse me.
They also have Salvador Perez, who's probably the best catcher in baseball right now. But with their win tonight, Kansas City has gotten to 500. Just if you were people were our listeners, all five of them at home, were wondering what we meant by the mediocrity comment. Kansas City just got to 500 with their or back to 500 with their win tonight. A couple teams that are one game below 500 each are the Seattle Mariners and Tampa Bay Rays. The Tampa Bay Rays, Josh, are sitting at 70 and 71. They got off to a really hot start. And this team we talked about is built in a bit of an interesting way.
Yeah, I mean, this team is definitely kind of a classic Rays team where there's a bunch of value buys and a bunch of value players that they're throwing out there, but they all have kind of a very similar profile. excuse me. That you could kind of see where the Rays were trying to go. So, I mean, when you look at some of the names they have, you realize that it's a team full of pretty streaky hitters that could possibly, you know, catch fire at the right time and then lead them go. I think the best example is them going out to get somebody like a Lucas Duda, having a Logan Morrison or a Corey Dickerson on the team. I mean, they've seen some pretty good stuff out of a Brad Miller. But for the most part, this isn't a team that has, you know, besides Evan Longoria, who is, you know, getting a little bit older, is kind of past the star prime for him. This is a team that doesn't really have any kind of top, you know, middle of the order, top of the order career guys who you just are like, yeah, that's a stalwart. I know he's going to come out, he's going to produce. You have a bunch of guys who you're like, hey, at the top of their games, they're going to come out and they're going to put up some great numbers. But, you know, you are really only counting on that for maybe about a month, 6 weeks at a time, and then the rest of the time you're just kind of hoping that they can weather the storm. So I think the the Tampa Bay Rays were basically just trying to catch lightning in a bottle, but you know, that's just proving harder than they hoped for.
Yeah, it certainly looked like they had it at the start of the year. They were hanging up there with the Red Sox and the Yankees for quite a long stretch of at the beginning of the season. I think they were pretty competitive all the way into July. But they've really fallen off. Their hitting has kind of tapered off a bit as the season has worn on, which is just kind of what you expect when you're being carried by guys like Logan Morrison and Steven Souza Jr.
Yeah.
Not to really knock those guys. I like Steven Souza and I like Logan Morrison both a lot. But they're really not there's no world beaters on this team. Evan Longoria is not really the MVP candidate Evan Longoria of old, even though he is having a decent year. I just think it's they were really, like you said, they were hoping to build a team, and this is all just hearsay. I think they were hoping to build a team that, under the right circumstances, could have a really kind of magical year. But they've really kind of died off. If we're going to make a prediction on them, I'm not a believer in Tampa Bay just because this year right now they're just not good enough.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, there is that chance for a flame to spark and, you know, all of a sudden they're, you know, on a 10-game win streak as we've seen another team actually do recently. But it's just very hard to kind of see with the kind of the across the board just average numbers that have been put up. You know, you're kind of hoping, you know, at some point somebody decides to catch fire, but it just hasn't happened yet. And it's really hard to just bank on that happening. So I agree with you. I think the Royal I keep saying it. Yeah, but I agree with you. I think the Rays are on the outside looking in.
Yeah, so the Rays have a 6.9% chance at the playoffs right now.
Yep, same as the Mariners.
Yep, and I was just about to say, the Seattle Mariners have a 6.9% chance at the playoffs right now. We talked about Kansas City. They can kind of pitch, but they can't really hit consistently. Seattle's kind of the opposite in that they can definitely hit, but they can't pitch at all.
Something about that organization. I mean, I'm just always going to be betting against them. They seem to be allergic to the playoffs. But I mean, it's a squad that has James Paxton, who's a really, really, really good pitcher, and yet they're 6-7 in his 20 starts. Or he's 6-7. They have a losing record in his 20 starts, and it just feels like they're kind of wasting that talent on the mound. Because after that, you're looking at somebody like a Hisashi Iwakuma, excuse me, who's
on the 60-day deal.
Right. Who was pretty good, you know, for part of the year and was pretty good a couple years ago. But, I mean, you have Felix Hernandez, who's, I don't want to say is a shell of himself, but it's just not the same Felix that we're all used to seeing. I mean, he's been pitching for, I think, 12 or 13 years now. Mike Montgomery's been okay. A couple of the other guys that they've had have been okay. But, I mean, if you look at their bullpen, this is a team that's just basically trying whatever they can. I mean, they're throwing Steve Cishek and Drew Storen, who are basically two bullpen rejects from other teams out there. So they're just, you know, at the beginning and at the end of games, they're just kind of throwing some mid-level arms out there. And even when they do have some talent going out there, they're just not supporting it, so.
Yeah, and this is definitely a team that I would want to see in the playoffs. They have Gene Segura at shortstop, who's having a career year. Robinson Cano is really having... He's Robinson Cano. He's a great, great player, one of the best second basemen in baseball. Kyle Seager can rake. He's got 21 home runs. There's a lot of power in this lineup. Nelson Cruz is... another great player. He continues to defy the ravages of time and hit home runs. It's a really fun team to watch hit, but there's just they struggle to prevent the other teams from scoring runs, which is a big, big problem when you're trying to play professional baseball.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, I mean, there seems to be a kind of common thread through these teams. How, you know, they can play one side of the ball pretty well, but the other side is just lacking to the point where, like, you know, these are all mediocre teams. These are all teams that are just kind of sitting around 500, whether a couple of games below or above, and just haven't really, you know, found whatever it takes to kind of separate themselves from the pack. Whereas when you look at the teams that are leading the divisions right now, like a Boston, Cleveland, and Houston, I mean, you're able to look at those teams and say, hey, look, they're pretty good all across the board. They're pretty solid, and like, guess what? They've separated themselves from the rest of the league. So,
after we've talked about Kansas City, Seattle, and Tampa Bay, who we've, I think we're in agreement, probably have no realistic shot at making the playoffs. There is another team who I'm really surprised is in this mix. A couple of teams who I'm surprised are in this mix, who were sellers at the deadline and managed to get better. Of course, the team I'm talking about, to start this little diatribe, is the Texas Rangers. They traded their best pitcher for prospects, and now the Texas Rangers sit above 500. And are, I believe, 1.5 games out of the second wild card spot. 2 games out of the second wild card spot. Josh, what happened there?
Yeah, I mean, that right there is like the epitome of what's going on in the American League right now. You had a team who basically looked at their record and said, there's no way we should be in this right now. And then all of a sudden you looked at the standings and you realize like, nah, they're a fringe team. Like they still have a chance. I don't blame them for making the move to trade away Darvish, because at the end of the day, like, you know, these organizations are having to try and figure out, hey, what's the value of trying to chase the opportunity to go play a one game series? How much do you owe the future? Do you want a mortgage to just take your chance basically at the roulette table? But It's interesting that, you know, they basically played solid baseball over the last month, and that's all that you needed to do to get back into the get back into the race. I mean, they've had, you know, Adrian Beltre, Elvis Andrews, Rougned Odor. Like, those are guys who have done pretty well, but they've also kind of gotten lucky. I mean, Ian Desmond, they basically were able to pick up off the scrap heap. He's been good for them. Jonathan Lucroy was terrible. They were able to dump him and then get better at the catching spot with Robinson Chirinos and a couple other guys. So they're in a tough position where I think they actually made the right decision in terms of their organization. Maybe not for this team currently right now, but for the organization, they made the right decision.
The decision to go into a rebuild.
Exactly. But I think
probable rebuilds.
Yeah, exactly. But I think when you're looking at the, you know, standings right now, it's not, you have September call-ups to come up to try and just get them, you know, some time, and it's basically makes the end of the season useful for teams that are out of the race. But I think the Rangers have an excellent justification for why they would sit here and try and play these games pretty competitively, because you never know. Once you do get to the playoffs, it's a crapshoot. I don't think you want to mortgage the future for it, but if you can get there, like, hey, why not go for it?
Yeah, I think the Rangers, their big problem they're going to have is that they're another team that does not have any good starting pitching. I mean, they have some decent bullpen options. Alex Claudio's having a decent year in the closer spot, and Matt Busch, you know, came back from the dead to turn out to be an actual decent reliever, even though he's on the 10-day DL right now.
I mean, he came back from prison, didn't he?
Yeah, he came back from prison to pitch in the majors. And then Joey Gallo has started. He's gotten hot. He's raised up his average to a healthy 211. But he's also got 37 home runs.
That'll play in today's baseball league.
You know, Nomar Mazara is up and hitting. They have Mike Napoli and Shin-Soo Chu on this roster. But you look at their starting rotation after trading Yu Darvish, and you're like, who's their best pitcher? Is it Cole Hamels? Is it Martin Perez?
Yeah.
I can tell you it's certainly not Tyson Ross.
No.
A team that also features Andrew Cashner. Like, this is just another team, like you said, who is good at one thing, which is offense. But there's not... they do not have the balance to you would expect from a playoff baseball club. One quick note on the Rangers, though, even though they are going to have to do some rebuilding, probably get rid of Elvis Andrews, need to pick up another outfielder. There is certainly some hope with this young core of Gallo, Mazara, and Rougned Odor, who's only 23.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I even think the Rangers, you know, looking at the beginning of the season, they had a pretty good chance of making it in. I just want to make sure we all don't forget how Sam Dyson decided to just single-handedly just nuke this season for the Rangers. But, you know, a couple wins and, you know, they would easily be right there in the race, right there kind of with the Yankees, who right now are currently in the first wild card spot. And I definitely think they would have a chance. So that core right there is already starting to show some value, and they're pretty young. Like you mentioned, they're all going to get better. So they are definitely not looking at what a Kansas City or a Tampa Bay are looking at. They're not looking to do a full rebuild. I think they're basically just looking to say, hey, look, this isn't our year. Let's get some value for some expiring contracts, and then let's see what we can pull off in the offseason to set up for next year.
Yeah, and moving on from the Rangers is the number one team I wanted to talk about on this podcast. A team that I love to hate, but I have to admit is probably got the best shot at coming out of this trash heap. And that's the Baltimore Orioles. You and I had a good bit of fun in our first podcast for making fun of them for trading for Jeremy Hellickson, for making fun of them for not trading relievers like Darren O'Day and Zach Britton. And yet here we are, and the Baltimore Orioles have been charging through August since the trade deadline. And they now sit one game out of the second wild card spot. And They're 7-3 in their last 10. Josh, this team can really hit.
Yeah. Whoops. Yep, that's on us.
Big whoops.
I mean, and like we said, now this is another team that's just one side of the ball, but like this is a team that can absolutely go out and mash the ball. Plus, they play in a park that just favors their lineup. So, I mean, you look at some of the guys they have, like Scoop, Machado, now that he's turned it on. Chris Davis is on his classic hot streak. You look at Trumbo. You look at some of the younger guys like Mancini and even a Joey Rickard. Like, this is a team that can put bat to ball and go out there. Adam Jones, don't want to leave him out there. They can go out there and score them some runs. You've always just worried about their pitching. You've always worried about it. And, like, we were at least right to say, hey, going out and getting Jeremy Hellickson won't help them, because he hasn't. I mean, he's basically been Ubaldo 2.0. But they are an elite enough offense compared to what they're competing with that they can put up runs to survive their deficiencies on the pitching side. Way better than any of the other teams that we've mentioned. So, you know, like, especially when you kind of line them up with a team like Seattle that we mentioned earlier, like, I'm going to take the Baltimore lineup, you know, 10 times out of 10. So they are definitely in the position now where they're making the hard charge to get to the playoffs. And, you know, when you look at some of the records of these teams, like, they're all within, you know, 3 or 4 games of 500. I think the thing that you want to look at is the team that's probably going to make the playoffs out of this one and secure that last spot is probably the team that just manages to put a hot streak together at the end of the season. I think there's about roughly 24 games left for most of the teams in that area, whether it's 22 or 26. I mean, any team that decides to at least, you know, win 16, 17 of them, that's probably the person who's going to be able to pull themselves to the front of the pack. It's just, you know, who's going to be that team? And right now it's looking like the Orioles.
Yeah. One thing I think is interesting about the Orioles and the rest of this mess is that where the previous teams we've mentioned so far can do one thing and then there's really no signs of life, no hope on the other side of the ball, the Orioles, in their weakness in starting pitching, do have Dylan Bundy and Kevin Gausman, who have started to show some serious signs of life. Dylan Bundy had a great, was it Dylan Bundy or Kevin Gausman who had the complete game the other day where he looked fantastic?
That was Bundy.
Yeah, and they're both, they both certainly have the talent, unlike some of the other starters you see. So I look at the Orioles and I see a team that probably not only can get into the wild card playoff game, but could might even be able to do some damage if they were to win that game and get in to play a team like Houston, who has started to falter.
Yeah, I mean, when you get to the playoffs, you really only need the top of your rotation. So, you know, fingers crossed, no more Ubaldo this year. And yes, I will continue to rip on Ubaldo. It's hilarious to me. But, like, with...
Josh, like, I think that horse is about as dead a horse as you can beat.
So the reason I rip on him is just because I remember being in high school and going to watch him, like, during his year with the
You and I went to that Rockos. Game, didn't we?
Yeah, Rockies. And remember, we were talking about how he was
throwing
sitting
99
there
from the stretch.
In the eighth inning. Like, after throwing, yeah, like, 80 or 90 pitches, he's out there just rocking and firing. And we were trying to figure out, like, how does this man ever struggle? And, you know, it's very clear after the last 2 years, like, he has no idea where the ball's going. And you had your whole career to figure this out, and he just hasn't done it yet. Otherwise, he would be right there on the pitching tips of greatness. But whatever. You know what? That's fine. Waste your talent. That's fine with me.
You know why he has no idea where the ball's going?
Because that janky motion?
Because he refuses to... pay homage to our Lord and Savior, Henry Rodriguez.
Oh, man. See, that was an experience for one inning, whereas Ubaldo makes you go out there and suffer through 5+, maybe into 6.
Yeah. One other thing I do want to point out, if you're looking for a team to potentially have an impact call-up, look no further than the Baltimore Orioles, who on Friday, last Friday, called up prospect Chance Sisko, who is one of the top catching prospects in baseball.
Yep.
Potentially even the top. I don't know where the league-wide rankings stand among catching prospects, but he had a great he's had a great few years in the minor leagues. A lot of talent. And if you're looking for somebody to spell Wellington Castillo down the stretch, who won't, you know, actively damage the team like Caleb Joseph has, Chance Sisko might even be your guy. He hasn't had an at-bat yet, but he certainly has the talent to be the Orioles' catcher of the future. And we haven't really talked about what a brilliant pickup Tim Beckham was.
Oh, just a great move. Probably right up there as, you know, would you say is probably one of the best moves that have been made for a team in terms of how it's paid off in the immediate?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we were talking during the podcast on the trade deadline that the most likely best moves would have been J.D. Martinez, Eduardo Nunez. But we didn't even think to mention Tim Beckham in that list, and he is right along with those guys who have both been fantastic for their new clubs.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned how, you know, Chance Sisko's a prospect. Like, Tim Beckham was supposed to be one of the ultimate prospects, and he's finally looking like the 1-1 draft pick that he was. So it's nice to see for the guy, but it's also very interesting to see how it has paid huge dividends for the Orioles and, you know, would be a very welcome bet on the Tampa Bay Rays right now, who gave him up for, I don't want to say nothing, but like, but yeah, I mean, when you look at the price of a dude who's basically buried on the bench and, you know, not being able to get a lot of at bats, it made sense. So you can't really judge the Rays for making that trade, but man, I bet the Orioles are excited about it.
Yeah, and another team that's interesting that started to charge hard, who is finally started to reach levels that we've wanted them to be at for quite a bit, is the Los Angeles Angels. I'm rooting for the Angels because I want to see Mike Trout get back to the playoffs. He is the best player.
Exactly. I mean, if you're a baseball fan, you root for that.
But they're a team who they're getting good production from, obviously, from Mike Trout, from Cole Calhoun, from a number of guys across the board, but as well as from Albert Pujols. But they also made a couple interesting moves at the deadline to make themselves better as well. And they also made a move after the deadline that will be interesting to see if it pays off in picking up Justin Upton, who you and I guaranteed would not get traded.
Whoops. We're good at that. Yeah, I mean, I think for the most part, the Angels have kind of won the August waiver trade deadline. They were able to go out and get Justin Upton, which was a nice bet. I mean, their outfield is looking pretty solid right now with Trout, Upton, and Calhoun. And then they're also able to pick up Brandon Phillips from the Braves and, you know, bring in a, you know, I don't necessarily like to always lean back on this, but it is kind of nice to bring a dude who has some veteran presence and kind of helps a team that, I mean, I guarantee you most of those guys on the Angels probably didn't look at the beginning of this season and say, hey, look, this is a playoff team. Like, let's go. But, you know, he'll be there to kind of help guide them a little bit and add another voice in there. I know Mike Scioscia is you know, kind of a hardline manager, but it's always nice to kind of have leadership from your players as well, too. The other thing, I mean, you also look at the fact that they have been basically performing pretty well, and a lot of guys have been outperforming. I mean, Anderson Simmons has finally figured out how a bat works. That's kind of nice to see. You look at Albert Pujols, he's kind of a reanimated corpse. Like, he looks like he's alive now. And you got a bunch of other guys who have come out, and, like, you know, Jeffrey Marte has been kind of a silent guy who's posted a 113 WRC plus in 88 games, 284 at bats. So just useful pieces off the bench that have kind of helped them. kind of weather the storm that is their starting rotation.
Yeah, and it's not like their starting rotation is as much of a disaster as some of the other teams we've mentioned so far, but there really is not a lot to be hopeful about there. I think their best pitcher right now is Ricky Nolasco, he's Ricky Nolasco.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they have Garrett Richards, and Garrett Richards is a pretty good dude. I mean, he goes out there and puts up pretty good numbers. The problem is he does it in limited sample sizes because he's just consistently getting injured. You know, somebody like a Tyler Skaggs or a Nick Tropiano, Hector Santiago. I mean, these are guys who you like during the season because you kind of know that you can throw them out there. They'll go ahead and eat up seven innings and be able to kind of help save the bullpen and, you know, get you some wins along the way. But I don't know if they're necessarily the same arms that you, A, will want to kind of ride for a hot streak to get into the playoffs, and B, want to use once you're there. So the Angels are, I think they're kind of behind the Orioles in their ability to kind of cover their pitching staff's behinds. Because the Baltimore at least has two starters that they can kind of lean on that have kind of shown out this year, whereas the Angels kind of just been average across the board when it comes to pitching.
Yeah, and they finally have Mike Trout back. And I don't know if you'll agree with me. I'd certainly hope so that if they get into the playoffs, their entire playoff hopes rest on Mike Trout.
Yup. I mean, any team that basically gets in the playoffs, if you had Mike Trout on your squad, like, hey, that's who you're riding. You're hoping that guy catches fire and does it. But I think for the Angels, you look at them and you're very dependent on him kind of being the beacon that leads your team towards glory. And I think he can do it, but you're just asking a lot of one player in baseball, which is a notoriously team-oriented right. sport.
And now we're finally on to a team that I know is one of your favorites in the American League right now, and that's the Minnesota Twins.
That's actually, you know what, I'm going out on a limb, and it's not that big of a limb just because they're currently sitting in the final playoff spot right now. But I'm going to go out on a limb and say that the Minnesota Twins will actually be able to kind of make up for the atrocity that was last year and kind of keep the 2015 energy going and go ahead and steal that last playoff spot. I just really like the fact that they have a lot of young players who have decided to, step up and really show out at the major league level. Byron Buxton, looked like classic Byron Buxton at the beginning of the season, just a really athletic guy who could make some plays in the outfield, but had no idea, how to read a pitch or how to tell if off-speed was coming or anything like that. And Fangraphs did a pretty good, interesting piece on it. When you give him enough bats, at-bats in a season, he starts to get better. And, luckily this year he's been able to get those at-bats in the major league level, and he's taken off here in the second half. So, it's nice to have an all-star caliber center fielder who just brings blazing speed to the base pass, can hit a little bit, has some power on him. You also look at somebody like a Max Kepler. That was another big prospect for them. He's having a pretty good year. I think he's in his third year. He's doing a pretty good job of, starting to deliver on some of the potential that we all wanted to see. On the pitching mound, Jose Berrios, he's been okay so far. I think the stuff there is really exciting. The stuff there is something that you expect to see at the top of the lineup. And, I mean, he's had some flashes of brilliance, but do I trust them in the playoffs? No, but do I think he could help them get to the playoffs, which is what we're talking about? Yeah, actually, I think he can.
Yeah, there's a lot to be really be excited about with this team. Obviously, everybody knows about the prospects, Buxton, Kepler, even other young guys like Eddie Rosario. Miguel Sano is going to be coming back from the DL very shortly.
Yep.
But there's a lot of other guys on this team who you really want to root for. They're those kind of guys. Robbie Grossman has kind of been a pretty average player throughout his career who's kind of found a home in terms of a place where he can, play decent baseball and be a contributor. They still have Gio Mauer playing first base, who who's having a good year. He's batting .300 this year.
Which I absolutely did a double take, because Gio Mauer is a dude who I know is pretty good, yet every time I see his name, I'm just still surprised to see him in the league.
They have Jason Castro, who's kind of bounced around the league for a while, who's a decent catcher. And on the pitching mound, they got Irvin Santana, who I've loved for a long time. He's kind of a... I like the little guys who are pitchers. He's kind of a junk baller. They got Big Sexy. They've got Hector Santiago, who throws a screwball. There's only like a couple of those guys in the majors. There's a lot of interesting characters on this team, and I want them to do well because I like a lot of these guys. But I don't see this as being their year. I see this as one of those teams where there's a couple of these. This seems like the year before their year, where they need their guys to develop a little bit more before they really make that jump.
I'll tell you who is developed, though. Brian Dozier. He is also putting up a fantastic year for this team. I think he's kind of like the guy you could expect to be a veteran presence on them. I mean, he's been an offensive force, you know, especially at the second base position. I really like him as a piece. You know, the Dodgers were basically trying to trade for him. And the Twins were basically demanding some of the top prospects from the Dodgers. And, you know, the Dodgers balked at it. And Brian Dozier basically proves the Twins right. Like, this is a top-tier talent, especially at that second base position. So I think there's enough guys there who are producing, especially like definitely on the offensive side. And I think even when you look at the pitching side, I mean, you know, like I said, I mentioned Berrios, you mentioned Santana, who's doing his classic trick of just outperforming his peripherals. But you also have guys who like Phil Hughes, who are just steady, go out there and get the outs done. Like I said, probably not a guy that you want necessarily starting in the playoffs to like lead you to glory, but does a pretty good job of actually pitching during the regular season and putting up some value. So I think the Twins are going to be able to hold on to that final position. I definitely don't think they're going to be able to pull away with the final position just because it is a tight race.
Yeah. And that brings us to the last team in the wild card picture. And this is the team that you really have to expect is going to be locked into a playoff spot, because this is the team that you look at their roster and you're like, okay, they're actually good. And that's the New York Yankees. And I really hate to say that because I'm a Red Sox fan and I really don't want the Yankees to be any good ever. I also want the rivalry to exist, which doesn't happen when the Yankees are bad. But the Yankees, they've done a good job developing a good young core with Ronald Torres and Aaron Judge and Gary Sanchez coming up.
Paul Bird coming back soon. Yep.
Bird's coming back. They've got some prospects who should be up throughout the year. They've got a good mix of young talent with older talent. They went out and made the right moves at the deadline. They got Sonny Gray. They got David Robertson. This is a team that's definitely built for a playoff run. They just don't have... it seems like their win total doesn't match their talent level.
Excuse me. The thing about the Yankees are that they are clearly, of the teams that we've mentioned so far, they're clearly the best one. They're clearly the team that's closest to being a whole product that can go out and pitch and hit the ball and also field it. I think you're right. I think they have some wins missing. I think there was a little bit of a storm I don't want to say storm. I think there was a little bit of a lull at the beginning of the season where they were just kind of, you know, treading water, and that's kind of sapped the energy out of the record. But I think for the most part, when you look at the talent that team has, I think it's a pretty safe bet that they're going to hold on to at least one of the two spots. They are just better than the rest of the teams trying to chase them. So when you look at that, it's hard to see them sliding far enough back to lose that playoff spot. So yeah, I'm going to say they're in. I mean, that's pretty easy to pretty easy.
Yeah, they're certainly position. The most balanced team. They have a lot of depth across the board. Their starting pitching is actually really impressive when you look at. They have Severino. They have Tanaka, who started to pitch better. Severino's been one of the better pitchers in the MLB this year. They did pick up Sonny Gray, while I think he's, I'm a believer in Sonny Gray as a pitcher long term. I'm just not. He's kind of been inconsistent with the Yankees so far. They also have. If you're looking for another couple of impact prospects who could help out with September call-ups, Chance Adams, who had a good year in the minors this year, and Clint Frazier. Clint Frazier's already spent time at the major league level, but really struggled, but he's certainly a big talent.
Now, I mean, I agree. When you look at the lineup up and down, and you look at some of the bats they're throwing out there and the arms they're throwing out there, it's pretty clear cut that, like, I think the race really is just going to come down to who wants to slide into that last spot.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I guess I got a question for you. With this kind of just, like, you know, race of mediocrity, you know, basically MLB added the second wild card to, you know, try and incentivize teams to want to make the playoffs and, you know, I guess kind of help, you know, fan bases stay engaged with their teams a little bit deeper into the season, seeing that they have a chance, which is definitely what's been accomplished now. As you can see, like all but four teams in the American League are sitting here going, hey, playoffs, at least a possibility. But at the same time, we're watching a lot of teams that are just kind of average to maybe even below average kind of slug it out with each other. And I don't want to say it looks like it's watering down the product, but I almost feel like the race between the Brewers and the Cubs has been more exciting simply because you had the Cubs, who are the defending world champs, and you had the Brewers, who are these upstarts who are overperforming and actually going out there and playing good baseball, kind of duking it out for playoff position. Whereas in the American League, you're just kind of watching a slugfest where it's like, hey, look, we got to throw five teams out there, so somebody's going to make it. Do you think, like, MLB is looking at this situation and it's just like, hey, you know, it is what it is. Like, if the, you know, if an average team makes it into the playoffs, like, good for them or whatever. Or do you think they're kind of looking at this going like, hey, yes, awesome. Like, we have almost an entire league fully engaged this far into September baseball. This is good for us.
Yeah, I think that's the way they look at it. I mean, obviously, the more people pay attention across the league, that's going to be good for them because it's going to raise revenues. But I think the second wild card came about in the hopes of creating a situation like what happened in 2011, Game 162. Do you remember where, you know, you had the, in the American League and the National League, both days, you had the, you know, mass changes on the final day of baseball to really throw the playoff picture into upheaval, kind of.
Yeah, that was fantastic.
It was the best day of regular season baseball ever. I think awesome. When the MLB started discussing this in 2010, this is kind of the exact thing that they had in mind. Or that was kind of the exact thing that they had in mind, where it was one game where everybody would pay attention that was kind of like an extension of the regular season where you could pit a team that was probably better in one case, for purposes of this discussion, you know, the Yankees, against a team that got hot, to really give a chance to see who was going to to really see like who could really do damage going into the playoffs against the clear-cut division winners. Because you do, for the divisional system, you do need to have a wild card. There's just no other way to work the playoffs.
Right. Right. I mean, I think I like it. I mean, I do like this aspect of seeing teams and having a bunch of them just be involved. And I think in terms of, you know, financially, which is at the end of the day the important part, yeah, that's definitely the best thing for baseball. I just also think it's very interesting to try and watch these teams adjust to this new environment where, hey, look, if you are like, you know, within 3 to 4 games of 500, you have a shot. Because, you know, everybody was basically looking at the Twins. Will they buy? Won't they buy? And we found out that they didn't even know what they wanted to do. They sat there. They decided to buy. Went and played the Dodgers when they were on the hot streak. Got blown up in 3 games and said, you know what? Time to sell. And then, I mean, you look at a couple other teams, too. Texas went out and decided to get rid of Yu Darvish, like we mentioned earlier, and all of a sudden they're back in it. So I feel like it's probably a headache a little bit from the, you know, general manager seat, but I think they're also pretty excited at the chance of like, hey, look, we can get in there into that playoff and get some extra revenue, kind of get some positive energy going behind the team. This is only something that can help us. So I don't think it's a bad thing. I just thought it was very interesting to see kind of how it's changed the landscape. I mean, the National League, as you tell, is basically operating business as usual. You just have a couple teams who are juggernauts riding off to
right,
the top.
The
you have a couple teams
that
are pretty much trash. Going
first
to the
wild card spot locked down in the National League basically the entire season.
For a while. And the Rockies basically had theirs locked up until about recently here. And, you know, they started to slide a little bit, losing games at home. But for the most part, I mean, you know what the National League playoff picture has looked like. This AL playoff picture has been much more exciting to at least discuss.
So I think that's basically really as much as there is to say about the AL wild card on September 6th. You want to give me 2 predictions? 3 or 2 teams going into the playoffs for the wild card game?
Well, I got you with the Yankees in the first one, and then I'm sticking with Minnesota in the second one. And then I am going to go and even say that the Yankees will win, and then they will take Houston to 6 games.
6 games in the first round?
I think so. Because I think they're pretty good. I think of all the – oh, my God.
That would be a hell of a task on the Yankees' hands to take Houston to 6 games.
I can't tell you, man. It's almost midnight here on the East Coast. I'm starting to taper off a little bit. But basically, I think they're going to give Houston a little bit of trouble. I'll say, you know what? They'll take them to 5 games.
I'm going to go with New York and Baltimore. And I'm going to take Baltimore over New York in a 1-game playoff.
Anything can happen.
The Indians are actually going to jump Houston, and I think Baltimore is going to go to Cleveland and get absolutely creamed. I don't think either New York or Baltimore is going to give Cleveland much trouble. They're the only team in the league as hot as Baltimore is right now, and they're probably the best team in baseball. Best team. They're probably the best team in the American League.
Shout out to Cleveland, because I remember at the beginning of the season, we saw the AL Central. I had no idea what was going to happen. And then all of a sudden, they just they flipped the switch and turned it on. Now they're sitting here only 2 games back of Houston for the best record in the American League. So, yeah, I mean, I was feeling pretty confident about the Houston's making it to the Astros, making it to the World Series. But Cleveland has, like, they've caught fire.
Yeah, Jose
fires.
Ramirez might hit 60 doubles, first player since 1937.
Man, remember when he was just a bit piece too? Like, he was a dude that they looked at as a liability, and then he just decided, oh, you know what? I can hit now.
Yeah, he's a launch angle guy.
They're everywhere, man. They're everywhere.